In truth, all of the Christian life is relational. Every single bit of following Jesus, every single bit is relationships. Love who? What's the first one? Love who? What's the second? Love people. Love God. Love. That's it. Like, it's fine to know your theology, and I think you ought to know what you believe, at least in the basics. Some of that stuff you're going to work out, some of the secondary stuff for the rest of your life. And that's okay, too, because that's part of the growth that you have as you walk with Jesus. But it's not a bunch of technical knowledge. It's good to memorize some verses. I think it's a good thing to know the Word and to know what you believe and to be able to even call it back to mind when you need it. That's an awesome thing. But that's not the faith. You could know all the right stuff and just be a total jerk and not really love God or people well at all. It comes down to love God, love people. It's all relationship. And if all the technical parts of the faith don't lead you to love God more and love people made in His image more, then it's a waste. Love God, love people. Love God, love. It's all relationship. But let's be honest, relationships aren't easy, are they? Have you noticed? I know I'm giving you some new news. What's this he's telling us? They're not easy? No, relationships are incredibly hard. And you know where they're the hardest? Family. Family. The dude at work, I may not like him, but I don't have to see him all the time. I get to go home. The problem is, I got to go home. Right? Relationships with family are hard. And some are harder than others. Family is hard because they know you best, they see you at your worst, they ought to love you the most, but they often fail, don't they? Some of you are thinking back to when you grew up and the scars you have from the things that happened, right? The dad who wasn't there, the mom who ran out, the parents that you could never do enough to get them to be happy with you. And listen, let's just be honest, some of you are carrying the trauma, some of us are carrying the trauma of that even now. Even people my age and older, you still have the scars of that stuff, don't you? They don't go away. This stuff is not easy. And no one is perfect, whether it's parent or child or maybe it's a sibling. Or nobody is perfect. No one. But some are a lot less perfect than others. Family stuff is hard. And we can find ourselves years later living in reaction to how we grew up. I've met people who hate Jesus, hate the church, hate religion. How dare you? Because of what they saw in their parents, the way their parents treated them, because they weren't perfect, and because that church wanted perfection as well. And so they lived their whole life in reaction to. There are people who spend their whole lives reacting to how they grew up without ever stopping to think, why am I doing what I'm doing? And if I live in reaction to, the truth is, those people are still controlling me. Those memories are still controlling me. And you're meant to live for more. When Jesus talked about setting us free, he wasn't just talking about jails and prisons. He meant you'll be free indeed. Yeah. Spend your time trying to prove yourself to people who have been dead for years, but you're still in your head trying to be perfect, trying to prove yourself, trying to be good enough. I knew this guy at Liberty. His dad was an evangelist. His name was Brian as well. I had long hair at the time. I know. Just go with me. It's a true story. I did. And he liked me just immediately. He's real popular and stuff. And I'm a guy who's coming from Roanoke because I'm married and I'm working a job and I'm a full-time student. So I'm going to Liberty for my Bible college degree, my undergrad degree. And this guy's real popular. He liked me and wanted to hang out with me. I come to find out it was because I had long hair and his dad, as an evangelist, hated those people. Like worldly guys with long hair and how dare they. And living his whole life in reaction to. Man, that's sad. In fact, it was so sad. His dad had been so under my thumb oppressive that he wound up becoming an alcoholic to medicate, wound up getting kicked out of school in his senior year. Jesus has something better for you than living in reaction to how you grew up. He does. He wants more for you. You're not the child of who you grew up around. And maybe you loved your parents and they were good parents. And maybe I'm not speaking to you, but all of us have relational issues somewhere along the line. And you've got a God who is your father now, and he's adopted you into the family. And if you know Jesus, listen, you're his beloved daughter, his beloved sister, a beloved daughter, beloved son. He loves you. You don't start working for God's approval. You start from his approval. That was won on the cross. How good is our God? Yeah. And so here's the big idea. When ego isn't given free rein, Goliaths get slain. Like when it's humility, man, the giants begin to die. Stay with me on this. I don't know why I just did that. Stay with me. We're going to do relationships issues from the life of David. We'll start in 1 Samuel 16. We'll go into 17 as well. We'll skip just a little bit. But here's what's happened. Let me catch you up. In our last episode, a king had disqualified himself. King Saul had disqualified himself, and God is going to anoint a new king. Some of this will be very familiar to you. We're looking at the relationship side. Let's jump in. 1 Samuel 16:4. Samuel did what the Lord commanded. He came to Bethlehem. Bethlehem, the place where Jesus is born. Why? Because it is David's hometown, and Jesus is going to be in the line of David. The elders of the city came out to meet him. What's that word? They came out to meet him what? Trembling. A prophet came to town. This could be bad, or this could be good. If it's bad, it could be very bad. He could be calling down fire. He could be, you know, just smiting people left and right. They came trembling and said, "Hey, you come in peace. Did we upset somebody? You come in peaceably. We're a little worried here." And God has said, "I'm going to provide for myself a king from one of Jesse's sons." So Samuel did what the Lord commanded. He went and he said, "I've come peaceably. I've come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves, ritually wash and get ready, and come with me to the sacrifice." Now, what you don't know, what you may not hear, is what he's saying is there's also going to be a feast. We're going to eat good tonight. We got a big old animal. We're going to kill an animal. We're going to sacrifice. We're going to anoint. And then you get to eat brisket. This is a good day, right? Now, you got southern people, right? This is a good day. You're eating brisket. And he's not killing you, so that's a win. This is good. And he consecrated, he personally ritually washed and made ready Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they came, he looked on Eliab and thought, this is the number one son, right? Man, this guy is strong and he's powerful and he's got this gravitas, this bearing to him. This must be him. I bet this is the new king. The Lord said to Samuel, don't look on his appearance or on his height. He's a big, tall guy. I rejected him. And here's the money verse, right? For the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And immediately we go, see, God looks at the heart, so I'm fine. Don't worry about my tattoos. God looks at the heart. I can have purple hair. God, and all that's true. But listen, God does look at the heart. That ought to make you tremble. That shouldn't be a pride thing. People got this tattoo, only God can judge me. Yeah, God's going to judge you. That shouldn't be like a, hey. No, that ought to be like, oh, crap. If that don't make you tremble, you got no clue about God's holiness or your ability to fall short continually, right? That's a humble thing. I'm not saying God don't love you. Please don't misunderstand. But instead of saying, hey, only God can, you ought to be going like, yeah, God's going to judge me. In fact, before I'm busy pointing a finger at you, I got my own stuff. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen us one. Then Jesse made Shammu, that's the way I prefer to say it, pass by. And he said, neither has the Lord chosen this one. And he made his seven sons pass by Samuel. And Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen these. Then Samuel said to Jesse, I'm supposed to know, are your kids here? I told you to go call your kids. All your kids here. Now listen, there's a prophet in town. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He ain't coming back. You'll probably never see him again. And he ain't killing you. Prophet in town, and you're going to eat brisket from the prophet. You call your family if you care about them. You do. And it's not that somebody has to be out there watching the sheep. They got somebody else who can. In fact, they will. They just don't bother calling David. And he said, there remains yet the youngest. And he's a young dude. He is probably 5 foot tall, they say. He's not real tall. He's not a big guy. He's just a young dude. No great gravitas or bearing. He's a young dude. There remains yet the youngest. But behold, we got him keeping the sheep. He's around. He could be around unclean animals. And so we don't know. But he hadn't been washed yet. And, you know, he's busy with things. And he's just the youngest. They wouldn't even call him. Didn't even bother. He's the forgotten one. Ooh, sound familiar to some of you in your families? You were the one they didn't really care much about, cared about your sister, your brother more. At least it felt that way. He's the forgotten one. He's the one, he would come back that night after watching all the sheep. And one of his brothers said, guess what we got to do? You missed out, but guess what? We got to hang out with a prophet. In fact, one of us got anointed king. And we ate brisket, barbecue sauce. It was good. Nah, he's doing the job no one else wants. In that day, in that age, the shepherd was not esteemed. He was looked down upon and despised because he hung out with the unclean animals that would try to attack the sheep. He could be around dead animals. They didn't like him much. So with his family, he's forgotten and despised. And we'll find out here in just a bit that David, regardless of how forgotten and despised and all the rest, faithful no matter what. Incredibly faithful, doing the very best he could with the job he was given. He's killing the animals that threaten the sheep. He's being faithful regardless of how his family treats him. And when it comes to family, sometimes we spend our time living in reaction to, and David could have done that. They don't care about me. They don't watch me. I'm not going to watch it. So what if we lose a few sheep? So what? I'm not risking my life for those sheep. Family don't care about me anyway. Or we can live proactively. Some of us, let me say it again, are still living reactively based on how we've been treated by family, by spouse, by kids, by parents, by... To the degree we are, let me say it again, we're controlled by them. And there's freedom found in living proactively. God, this is how you made me. This is what you want for me. This is the gifts you've given me, the passion you've put inside me, the personality I have. Forgetting what is behind, I'm going to look forward to what is ahead. I'm going to serve you, Lord. Some of you, if we're being honest, your course has been set by what has happened to you in the past. And those chains need to break. Some of you are dealing with addictions now because of things that happened then that you haven't let go of. And the dirty little secret is you can go to rehab over and over again, but unless you deal with what you've been through there, you're going to continually be seeking a way to be medicated. Today, you need to ask that question. What beliefs, what direction? What have I been doing that relates to something messed up that happened back then? And all of that is ego. How dare they do that to me? And when you kill the ego and you're humble, you can just be you. Nothing to prove to anyone, even to yourself. And Jesus wants you free. Say it again. When ego isn't given free rein, Goliaths get slain. We'll talk about those Goliaths. Hang on. Samuel said to Jesse, send and get him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. In other words, hey man, you smell that brisket cooking? You ready to go? Yeah, you ain't eating. Just stand up. You go get him. You ain't eating. I know your mouth's white. Not even the biscuit. Put down the biscuit, Shamu. Nothing until David gets here. So hurry it up. So he sent and brought him in. They left the sheep with one of their servants, brought David, and it says David was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. Let me translate. He's a redhead Jew in that time. That's literally what it means. And he was a pretty boy. He's not rugged and strong and got bearing and gravitas and muscle. He's a sinewy, thin, redhead, pretty boy. And in that day and in that age, pretty boy did not equal strength. I'm not going to say it. They could put him on a Bud Light can. He was a pretty boy. Not going to say it. We're going to edit that out, I promise you. And the Lord said, arise and anoint him. You may not see much when you see him. I do. I know his heart. Anoint him. He's the one. Yeah. Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him, poured it over him in the midst of his brothers. So his family is watching a prophet anoint him, most likely to be the next king. They're watching this happen. And here's the thing. The Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel ate the food, took off, went to Ramah, done his job, he ate the food because he's a prophet. You don't, pastors, prophets, priests, whoever, they don't, if there's food, they're going to eat, then they leave, just so you know. You ever invite a pastor over, feed him. And David is now honored among his family, right? You would figure, like, he's been anointed in front of them. They know something's different. And so you know that everything has changed. His dad knows he's going to be a king. His brothers, the Spirit of God is on him. So it's all good in the family, right? No. What God does in you and what God does through you doesn't guarantee there will be a change in what others do to you and how they treat you. And some of us, we keep trying for that approval. We keep trying for their attaboys. We keep going and we keep trying and we want to. Listen, don't waste time trying to explain yourself to people who are dedicated to misunderstanding you. It's a waste of time. Doesn't mean you have to hate them. Doesn't mean you have to cut off everybody who upsets you. I mean, stop trying to win approval from people. At best, listen to me, church, at best, you will win somebody's approval for now, and that is performance-based, and that means you have to keep performing to keep having their approval. And what a sucky way to live. You're free. Don't waste time. Yeah, he's been anointed. Yeah, his family's still going to see him as the pretty boy who watches the sheep and everybody forgets about. They're still going to see him that way. So David is anointed. King Saul, the king who's not going to be king forever because David is going to take his place, is tormented. The spirit has left him and he's tormented. And his men say, well, maybe you need a musician. Music's good for you. Maybe you need music. God gave rock and roll to you. Put it in the soul of everyone, deep in their soul. Yeah. And King Saul said, sounds good to me. Bring me Petra. And they said, we know a guy who used to play for Petra. His name is David. He's the son of Jesse. And they go and they bring Jesse. I may be using the Message version here. And so David comes. 10 miles away, takes about 5 hours to walk it or so. He makes it there, and David came to Saul and entered his service. Now we're talking, he's in the palace. This seems good, like he's got his upward track. He's already in the palace. He's working for the current king. He's playing his music, and he knows this because he was singing psalms to the Lord even back when he was keeping the sheep, so he's doing good work. And then this. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle. Now, we're going to skip a little bit here and there. Philistines gathered their armies for battle. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the Valley of Elah and drew up in a line of battle against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on one mountain on the one side. Israel stood on the mountain on the other side. And there's a valley between them. They're lined up. They're ready for battle. And let me ask you this, you tacticians, you strategists. Why hasn't one of the armies come down and started to attack? Okay, closer you get, the more accurate your weapons are. And if you're in the valley and they're up on the, they have the advantage. That's why you don't run down into the valley. Yes, absolutely. By the way, gold star, send that home to mom. That was good. Yes. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion. You'll know this one if you've read it before. I'm sure you have. Named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. Of course, we all know what that means. No. I looked it up. Probably between 8 and 9 feet tall. Big old dude. That's why he's called a giant. Big old dude. Growth hormone issue. Something. I don't know. No, it's the Gathites. But he is a big dude. He had a helmet of bronze on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was, so he's got all this armor on him, 121 pounds of armor. It's a big old dude, muscular, 121 pounds. I ride mountain bikes with a guy who probably doesn't weigh that. That's just his armor. And he had a bronze armor on his legs and a javelin slung between his shoulders, so he's ready with that javelin when he needs it. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, so it's this huge thing, and the spear's head weighed 600 shots, 15 pounds. You know, 15-pound dumbbell? The one you used to didn't think was much, and you got older, and now it's like, yeah, that's enough. I'll just curl this. That's heavy to be the head of the spear of the javelin. And he has a shield bearer that goes before him, and so he's all trussed up in all of this metal, and if something comes at him, his shield bearer's going first. This guy's protected. He is huge. He is large. He is in charge. You don't want to go against this guy. And he stood. He goes into the valley, and he shouted to the ranks of Israel, why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. Now, what he's looking for, of course, is a proxy battle, right? You choose your champion. I'm the Philistine champion. Whoever wins, wins the war. No more need for bloodshed. And if I win, all the Israelites are now my servants. Women, children, men, all of them. We use them any way we want. And if you win, you can do the same to us. And because this is Israel in this day and this age, he's also challenging their God, because the people represented the God. Is their God more powerful than the God of the Philistines? Dagon was his name. Do you trust your God to come through more than we trust ours? That's the question. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him, kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel, God's people this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And that's that moment when somebody asks for volunteers and everybody's head is kind of down here like this and they ain't meeting anybody's eyes, right? If you're in the military, they're going to volunteer you anyway. If you're not, you're just like this, right? This is that moment. You either trust God, who freed your people from slavery, who had you come into the promised land on dry land, who gave you Jericho when the walls fell. You either trust that God or you don't. This is that moment. They represent their God by how they handle themselves, faith or fear. And here's the thing. Faith says, I believe that God has called me to this, and so I believe that when I go, even if everything is against me, I believe God will show up. That's faith. Fear is, I believe the devil's going to show up, so to speak. Careful, I'm not saying if you have fear, you have faith in the devil. That's not what I'm saying. Please don't take me there. I believe in God, or I really don't. Everybody believes in God in church. A little different when your job is threatened if you don't lie to get the sale. A little different when you have to compromise your ethics in order to make your bills this week. Do I believe in God and what he has called me to? This is where it gets real. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now that word there, dismayed, is kathoth, and it means literally broken or shattered, shattered, shattered. Yes, Saul is shattered, and if he is shattered and greatly afraid, that's pretty bad. And if the king, if your commander is scared to death, then the people are too, because he's setting the standard. When the thing you fear is big, then your God is going to be small. But when your God is big, that thing gets small. You may still fear it, but it gets much, much smaller. Right now, their God is small. They're scared to death. He's out there. And if he's out there, who knows how many more giants may be over on the other side on that mountain. They're scared. And again, we already answered the question, why not just run and attack? High ground, valley, high ground, valley. So they could go out and kill a Goliath, but they don't have any more giants may be around, and they're in the valley. The three oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle. Here's we go back to David. So the three oldest sons, David's brothers, who don't really care much for him one way or the other, they've gone to the battle. They're on the battle lines. David was the youngest of the three eldest, followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. He's still doing sheep duty. The guy's been anointed king. He's still watching after the sheep. So David is serving. He's been anointed, but he's serving Saul, and his father still expects the shepherding, which is 10 miles away. So going back and forth, he's been doing that for a while. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward, took his stand morning and evening, taunting them, taunting their God. And Jesse said to David, his son, because his Facebook was broke, and he couldn't tell what was going on at the front lines, and he's worried about the kids he actually cared about. Take for your brothers an ephah of this parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp of your brothers. Also take 10 cheeses to the commander of their thousand. See if your brothers are well, bring some token, some word. Let me know. Bring a report of how they're doing to make sure they ain't dead. Tell me how it's going. So David is anointed, but he's just some errand boy taking bread and cheese to the front. He's just bringing the cheese. That's all he is doing. I just picture David saying, but Dad, I've been anointed king. Well, how cool is that? I've got a king doing DoorDash for me. This is awesome. It's humiliating. If David, now listen, we're going to go a little bit further. We've been talking scripture. This is Brian. Scripture, Brian. Check it and see if it works for you. If David infers that his father doesn't care about him, that his brothers think he's a loser. Infer means he just thinks that's what they're thinking. He becomes bitter and angry, reactive, maybe even walks away. Either way, he's not going to be in position to listen to the voice of God and meet divine opportunity when it comes. And it always, listen, divine opportunity always comes unexpectedly. It does. I am in a Bible study because I got nothing else to be doing. I'm a single guy in Roanoke, and it's a co-ed Bible study. And this blonde walks in. She used to have blonde hair back then. And I look and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, perfect, a divine opportunity. I didn't expect that. I met my wife at a Bible study because I'm in Roanoke with nothing else to do. If he gets bitter, if he gets reactive, if he walks away, if he's not in the right mindset to hear the voice of God, he's going to miss the opportunity. Be very careful of inferring. And you know what I mean? Like you tell yourself what they're thinking. You ever done that? You know, they just did that because they're upset with me. They're just treating me that way because they don't really like me much. We all are wired to do this. Brené Brown has done some groundbreaking work on this. We are wired in our brains to have an end to the story. So why do you look at me that way? Why did she say that to me? So we tell ourselves a story, and we believe the story we tell ourselves. Again, this is Brian, not Bible. Careful, Brian, not Bible. And that story you tell yourself can ruin the relationships you have. If you really wonder what's going on, instead of telling yourself a story, ask, why did you say it that way? Have I upset you? Don't get weird about it, just ask. Are you just trying to upset me? In marriages, it goes this way. Guys, you ever hear this? Don't say you have. I don't want to do counseling this week. You're just doing that to upset me. Woman, you ever said that? Any woman in here married never said that? Okay, repent of lying. Because that's what you're just doing that to upset. You're just doing that to make me angry. You're just doing that to annoy me. Can I promise you we're not, because we really don't like it when you're annoyed? Just so you know. Now, men will tell ourselves the same thing. She just did that to get on my nerves. But we just won't say it out loud. We'll just internalize it because we're not. I don't know if you know this or not. Women are more verbal than men. I know. Crazy. I know. Listen, stop telling yourself why others do what they do. Either ask if you don't know or forget it and walk away. You're not God, man. You don't know anybody's heart. You don't even know your own. Honestly. If David does this, he walks away. And he could. Is that not an option? Could David not just go ahead and walk away? I'm done. I'm going to go to another city. I'm done with this stuff. People walked away. Or he becomes bitter and sullen. Well, David, faithful, rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, took the provisions, and went as Jesse had commanded him. No arguing that we could see, no bitter attitude. No, hey, I'm busy. Do it yourself. I'm a king. None of that. Took the stuff, headed on off to the battle lines. And he came to the encampment as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. They've been doing this day after day. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers, because he's a kid and he loves his brothers and he wants to see how they're doing. This is after 8 hours of travel, by the way. I don't know about you, but after 8 hours of travel, I don't want to talk to anybody. He's running to see, make sure his brothers are okay. It looks like they might be going to battle. He don't know what's up. And as he talked with them, behold, the champion, the giant, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before, and David heard him. All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who has come up? Have you seen this guy? Dude's a giant. Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches, give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. He will make him rich if you kill Goliath. He will give him his daughter, put you in the royal household, and your family from now on is going to be free from taxation, which back then was a huge, huge thing. I know we don't pay much taxes now, but back then they paid a lot. Yeah. And David said to the men who stood by him, What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine, takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this? And this is the point right here. For who is this uncircumcised, this unclean Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? This is about the Lord for him. Nothing else. The Lord. Not ego. Not proving himself. Who is he that he should defy the armies of our God? That's what it's for. We represent our God. We trust our God. How dare he? And the people answered him in the same way. So shall it be done to the man who kills him. Now Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. And Eliab told himself a story. He said he knew David's heart. He inferred. And Eliab's anger was kindled against David. And he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your presumption. I know the evil of your heart. For you have come down to see the battle. You ain't going to do anything. You're just talking big, trying to look big in front of these other guys. And David said, what have I done now? I was just asking, was it not but a word? And when he says that you left those few sheep, you're derelict in your duty, and we can't even trust you with many sheep. You got an evil heart. You're just looking to act tough and watch a battle. And man, in David's response, I feel pain. I can sense it. If I put myself there, I got the pain of never measuring up. And man, if you got brothers, and you're the youngest, you want their approval. You want their love. You want to be part of the thing. And he's not part of the group. Man, I feel that pain. Well, what have I done now? Again? I was just asking a question. And he does this in front of everyone. I mean, do you not get there's a whole army around, a whole bunch of military guys? And his brother calls him out in front of all of them. That's humiliating. Family is hard. Man, there's so much history there. There's the pain and there's the slights and there's... You can't control what others do. You just can't. And if you try to, you're just going to make yourself crazy and drive them up a wall too. You can control how you respond. If you take a beat, you don't react, you act. I love what David does, because you can live in reaction to them or a life of proaction toward God based on God's gifting, his calling, his working alongside your personality and your passions. You can be controlled by them or you can be controlled by faith, trusting God. Watch what David does. I love this. We'll go a little further. He turned away from him. Doesn't say another thing. What did I do? Turns away and spoke in the same way. He still wants to know. And the people answered him again as before. He turned away. He didn't answer back. He didn't say, I don't see you out there, which, by the way, would have been a great response. Really? Hey, Eliab, I don't see you. In fact, when Goliath said something, I think you peed a little bit. Come on, Eliab. He didn't do that. That would have been my response because I got a smart mouth. I got beat up a lot too. But that would have been. No bitterness, no taunting back. He just, hey, listen, I want to make sure this is what's up. And the people answered him again as before. When the words that David spoke were heard, they repeated them before Saul, and he sent for him. King says, hey, maybe somebody's finally going to go. I'm a king. I'm not going to go because I'm scared to death, but maybe somebody else will go. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and will fight this Philistine. Dude's about 5 feet tall. He's young. He has never been trained for war, ever. He's wanting to fight an 8 to 9 foot tall, huge, ginormous warrior with a growth hormone problem. And Saul said to David, you can't go up against him. Hey, redhead pretty boy, you weigh about 120. His armor weighs more than you. You're a youth. And he has been a man of war from his youth. David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. I still do, but I used to also. And when there came a lion or a bear or a lamb, and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and I struck him and I delivered it out of his mouth. Now here's the thing, he didn't have to. He could have said, well, I tried, but they got away too fast. He didn't, but he was faithful. He risked his life to be faithful to a family that didn't care much about him one way or the other, that gave him a servant's job. If he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and I struck him and I killed him. I've been fighting these animals. I've been doing this faithfully for years. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and the uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied, here we go, this is your tagline, he has defied the armies of the living God. It's not about ego, ain't about pride, not about self-seeking or proving family wrong. He has defied the armies of the living God. And I trust my God. Faith, God will show up. Oh, the fear, I'm sure, is still there. But there's something about faith that makes you rush into that fear and confront it. And every single time you do, and you grow in your faith, and that fear becomes smaller. And every single time you give fear place in your relationships, in your conflicts, it grows and you become more immobilized. I believe God's going to show up, is what he's saying. You orient your life around trusting and glorifying God, and you see beyond the surface to what's really going on. King Saul and all of his military see a giant. We can't take him. David sees God and his glory. God can take him. You orient your life around God, and you're able to see beyond everything else to see what's really going on. Your years of faithfulness to even the least and lowly jobs, shepherd. Keeping sheep safe, regardless of how you're treated, is never wasted. Listen, if you're loving Jesus right now and you're faithful as a spouse, you're faithful as a child of a parent, even if the parent isn't perfect, you're faithful as a parent, even though the children are rebellious, you're faithful where God has placed you, if that's where you are. It's never wasted. God sees, God redeems, God recompenses, always. He's been faithful with this lowly little job. He didn't know, but he was in training with his faithfulness. God was Miyagi-ing him. Wax on. He was doing that. I'm serious. And here's the corollary. How they treat me never gives me permission to do anything other than what God would call good and right. Ooh. Including your marriage. Especially your marriage. Are you rationalizing? Are you using it as an excuse? Man, that needs to die today. They treat you wrong, you treat them right. They do you dirty, you do them well. God sees you're doing this for him, not for them. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Listen, when you're faithful in the little, the boring, the tedious little things of life, you're building the faith that you're going to need for the future. Let me say it this way. Let's just be real straight. Quit quiet quitting. Cut it out. I'm just going to go to work, but I ain't going to do much. Just a bare minimum. Then you'll never get anywhere. And you don't deserve to. Passive aggressiveness, gossip, rehearsing your victimhood. Oh, listen, you're in America. If you're a victim, you're in the majority now. Oh, you poor thing. That steals the blessings of God, not from others, but from yourself. The only person really hurting is yourself. Cut it out. He who is faithful, Jesus said, in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in very little thing is unrighteous in very much. How much will God trust you with? I don't know. How faithful are you with what he's given you? It's that simple. That's a simple principle. Well done, Jesus says. Good and faithful slave or servant. You were faithful in a few things. I'm going to put you in charge of many things. And there are some of you right now, and I guarantee it, sanitize for your protection. You are not faithful in the small parts of your relationship. You're angry that you don't have more, that it's not better. Be faithful where you are with what you have. Do it for God, not for them, for his call on your life. Not what the other person deserves or has earned, because that's not love. Serve and trust that God will recompense. And if it takes years, trust that God will recompense. That's what he has called you to. That's what you're supposed to do in your family. That's what you're supposed to do in your relationship. Let's go further. We're almost here. David said, the Lord who delivered me to the paw of the lion, the paw of the, he's going to get me. He got me. God's going to show up. And Saul said to David, go, the Lord be with you. King Saul sends out a kid to do a king's job. He sends this young guy out while he hides. He is not faithful, and he's not going to be king forever. Neither will his sons get his throne. Saul's armor doesn't fit. If you'll remember the story, I'm not going to go into it. David goes out with a sling. got a sling and a smooth stones. And he's an expert because he's been training for years. Goliath mocks the Philistine, cursed David by his gods. And David answers, "You come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin. Yep, looks bad for me. I'm wearing a red shirt on the away crew. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Again, it's not about him, it's about God. And he says this, "I'm going to kill you, I'm going to cut off your head." And he says, "And then we're going to take out your whole army." That's what he says in response. I love this. There's a word for this. It's in the Bible. It's baller. This guy is baller. "That the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all his assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear." If I can do it without God, it's not a God thing. "For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you," all of you, it's a plural, "into our hand." Ain't about me, the battle is the Lord's. So sling, stone, meat, forehead, he goes down. We're going to read all the rest. You'll know probably the rest of the story if you've been around church for a bit. Cuts off his head, walks around with the head of Goliath. By the way, when you go to one of their churches and they're doing one of their harvest festivals and they say Halloween costumes that need to be biblical characters, I'm just saying, give your kid this, bloody head, walking around, trick or treat. I mean, harvest festival, give me some candy. By the way, Jesus is going to be crucified on the hill of the skull. They believe that that's where David wound up taking that skull. Because Jesus is the greater David, and he slays the Goliath of sin in us and sets us free. And there's some of you here today, man, you need to be free. Jesus already died to give that to you. When ego isn't given free reign, when there's humility, Goliaths get slain. See, my ego is, I want to prove something. I want to live in reaction to. I'm going to get bitter. I'm going to argue. I'm going to run from. Faith is, I'm going to trust you, Lord. I'm going to be humble. I'm going to be confident in you because I trust you. What's your Goliath right now? What's your Goliath? Where do you need God to show up and show out? And the question is, will you? Will you take the first step? If you got scars from your family growing up, join the club. Most of us do. Maybe it was divorce. Maybe it was a parent who wasn't there. Maybe it was some abusive stuff. It can get pretty dark out there, right? You let it go. God, that's not mine to deal with. And you move forward, forgetting what is behind. I'm going to look forward to what's ahead, Paul said, talking about all of his accomplishments. Got a new vision. I got nothing to prove to them. Lord, what do you want for me? And those Goliaths, for some of us, will be addiction and medicating the things we've been through. By the way, if you were sexually abused, you're medicating. And no doubt, you are. Identify it, give it to God, seek help. Pain from the past, you got to let that go. Self-sabotage. What are your Goliaths? Do you really believe Jesus can't help you slay those things? And Goliath may always be there, but he don't have to have power and control over you. Your Jesus is greater and he is bigger. And it's time to trust him. As a church, we are called to be a place of healing and hope for those who've been hurt by religion or have dropped out of church. That's who we are, just so you know. That's why we don't do guilt and manipulation. That's why we're not going to back off of speaking truth, but you're always welcome here. As a church, we're a place of healing and hope. And if you've been hurt by church, been hurt by religion, welcome. Glad you're home. We want you here. We do. We're not going to be perfect either. Somebody here is going to say something to you that upsets you. Welcome to life. But we want you to find love, grace, peace, and truth that changes you. Community matters, and we are new community. That's who we are. I'm going to take a moment and pray. I'll see if there's questions, comments, or disagreements right afterwards.